This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
G'day everyone, Prep Aussie here. I hope you're all well in whatever part of the world you're watching this video. Today is 9th of the 1st, 2018, and the time here is 09:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Well, folks, if you remember, I said that I was going to have a featured guest interview this week, and I'm more than happy to say that it's David Morgan from the Silver Investor. David runs the Morgan Report as well. Both are extremely important in my mind in the financial world and for people to learn financial management. If you can get on the Morgan Report, I will leave the links in the description box at the end for everyone to get into. David, welcome. Thanks for accepting the offer of the interview.
Well, Prep Aussie, well, thank you. I appreciate having a new audience. I just, one of my bucket lists, I don't have a very long list, but one of them was to get to Australia. And as you know, I got to get down there recently and had a fantastic time. I went to the Melbourne Cup and I bet a long shot on the main race and I won the darn thing. I ended up collecting $170 on a $10 bet. And I was about the only one at the window because very few people bet that horse.
Well, Australia's been good to you then.
Oh, very good. And actually, as we're talking, I got an invite to come back and speak at another precious metals conference in Australia. And I have to read the details. It's a long trip and I don't mind. I'll go to pretty much any length to somebody I can help or, you know, pass the word about how bad this whole corrupt system is from the top down, starting with the bankers and everything that entails. But regardless, I loved it. And I always knew I'd love Australia and the people. They remind me of where I'm at here in the Northwest. There's a lot more critical thinkers and people that don't just accept things on their face value. It's more of a show me, don't tell me kind of an attitude. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we are known for that as a race of people, I believe. Just one second there, David. Okay. Well, mate, look, as I said, I'm absolutely flattered that you actually reached out. I will tell people that David is actually the reason why I've actually branched out into doing interviews and geopolitical stuff. He contacted me a while ago and said, you know, you should branch out a bit more. You have a voice for people, you know, care for people, et cetera, and that I should do this. And I was a bit hesitant, but his kind words and made me very humble. And I sort of branched out after David said that. So thanks very much for that, mate. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Well, you know, you're obviously a good critical thinker and you question almost everything that comes through the mainstream news. And, you know, I think it's good to get a broad perspective. I mean, if you focus on one area, that's fine. But it's always good to challenge ourselves a little bit and grow a bit more. And, you know, the best lessons in my life, fortunately or unfortunately, have been the fact that I made an error, made a mistake, and I'm willing to promptly admit it and move on and learn from it. You know, I don't want to repeat the same one over and over. But no, I encourage you because, you know, to me, real men, you speak from the head and the heart, and you do. And, you know, you end the Lord's Prayer for a reason. Certainly, I'm humble enough to know there is a God and I'm not it. And I think if we submit ourselves to a higher power, so to speak, that we probably are in a better place. A lot of people today just live in their heads, and we're taught in the States that the more you have, the more you have, which means the more materialism and the more crap that you collect, the happier you're supposed to be. And speaking from having that attitude as a youngster and outgrowing that a long time ago, I've come to realize it's really what you give to others that makes your life worth living. And of course, that's one of those things you hear about when you're younger. And I'll speak for myself. And I thought, how trite, how ridiculous. I mean, how could giving something to someone be, you know, generate happiness? Of course, with life's experience, I've learned that it's absolutely true. So a lot of times, when I go on these speaking assignments, people have a misperception that I get this huge speaking fee and none and none. You know, sometimes I get a fee, sometimes I don't. Most of the time, I don't. A lot of the time, it's on my cognizance to come up with the airfare and the hotel. Not every time. Most of the big trips like Australia, they pay for my airfare and give me a place to stay, which is all I ask on a big trip like that. But on some of these smaller trips, I just make a decision to pull it out of my wallet and do it anyway. And I do that.
Well, that shows that a true mark of the man, mate, if you want my honest opinion, to be able to actually do stuff like that in the position that you are, to reach out to people like that is amazing, mate. And I congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
I would actually like to, I know who you are, and a lot of other people know who you are. And obviously you're very highly credentialed in the financial field, but I would like to ask you, not the usual question, if you don't mind, as regards to, we all know the financial world's collapsing and, you know, it's just being pegged up by a couple of sticks here and there, so to speak. But what does someone like David Morgan do that prepares him for what's coming? You know, personally, mentally, physically, spiritually, and obviously financially.
Sure. That's a great question. And, you know, I could be long-winded, but I'll try to make it succinct. First of all, what I teach is primarily around the financial system. And I was very fascinated by money from a very early age. Don't ask me why, but I just was. And some of these people may or may not know me, so I'll just go from the beginning. I was 11 years old when the coinage in the United States changed from 90% silver coins to what I call the Johnson slugs. And that really impressed me because I'd saved up, you know, 5 cent allowance I got for water in my dad's orchard and doing some other chores. And one day I got this cupro nickel quarter, and I sensed this thing cannot be worth all these silver quarters I've saved. And of course I was correct, but most adults didn't pay any attention to that. Now at that time I didn't say I'm going to be heavy in the silver market, or I didn't know what I was going to do for a living. I was 11 years old, but I did note it. So anyway, my fascination with money sprang from there, and I started looking at it more and more, and I discovered, you know, how corrupt the banking system is, and the Federal Reserve isn't even federal. And I used to tell people that, and that was before the internet, way before the internet. Of course, I got laughed at. Most people thought I was full of it, because even though it's a provable fact that it's a private corporation, if you don't have the internet to instantly give them a link and prove it to them, you know, you kind of get, let's say, put to the side. So moving on to the financial arena, I want to make one thing very clear to everyone, and that is that my basis of my work has a big presupposition in it. And the big presupposition is that as this collapse continues, that there will be some financial systems that are still operating, and that you need precious metals to navigate through that. Now, it's possible that there could be a complete meltdown of the financial system for some given amount of time. I mean, that's happened in the past where the stock markets were basically shut off and the banks were closed. And if that is the case, if you have what I teach, which is some precious metals, particularly silver, you could, not necessarily would, be able to trade for food, for electricity, for, you know, goods and services. And I say it with some authority because, one, that's been shown to be true throughout history. And secondly, we only have to look as far as Venezuela right now, where there's an article up a couple of days ago that talked about being able to get medical care if you had gold coins, but if you didn't, good luck.
Yeah, I did actually see that. It's an absolute disaster. Is probably the only right word that you can call Venezuela at the moment, isn't it?
It's a disaster. So let's go a step further, and more importantly, so let's say that's sort of the top of it, is being financially prepared. What you really need to be, I think, is to be spiritually prepared, which means a lot depends on your attitude. A lot depends on your skill set and your ability to be mentally prepared. One of my favorite expressions, prep, as you know, is chance favors the prepared mind. And yeah, since you're all about prepping and you have a group there that you meet, you know, physically with and help each other and learn from each other and all those things, you need community. First of all, let me digress and say the lone wolf with a bunch of gold, a bunch of food, and a bunch of guns is a loser. They're never going to make it. What you need is you need some really good friends with hopefully a variety of skill sets. And then you can work together to improve your lot, however dire it may look. And again, coming back to the spiritual side, you've got to have an attitude that you can move into and say, my attitude is that no matter what, I can make things happen.
Yeah,
I can work with others. Just go ahead.
I was going to say, I tell a lot of people when they ask me, you know, they say, oh, I've got this, I've got that, you know, and the first thing I always say to people is, well, have you got any friends? you know, because you can't do this on your own.
Yeah.
You will not be able to, in actual fact, I tell most of them, I said, I'll personally get a T-shirt printed with a target on it and I'll send it to you if you plan on doing this on your own with your wife. You know, you're just mad. It's just not going to work.
Exactly. Yeah, communities first. I'd say so really to prep properly, and you have to do what I do, is one, you got to have a water supply and you've got to have food and, you know, well right. off enough to have, you know, stockpile of some food. That's what I really eat, which is the best food to have. In other words, you don't want to go out and buy a bunch of canned spinach if you hate spinach, you know, even if it's on sale. I mean, if you're hungry enough, you're going to eat darn near anything. But you really want to kind of look at what your lifestyle is now and kind of duplicate that out for, you know, a month, 2 months, 6 months. I'd suggest a year if you could afford it. And it doesn't have to be done in one day or one afternoon or even 1 month. I have a fair amount of what I call, you know, emergency food, which I have. In fact, I'll just give it a plug. I don't think they'll mail to Australia, but if you go to silverprepper.com, it's a URL I have for emergency food. It's pretty expensive. What I like about it is all you need is boiling water. And since I'm 65 and kind of lazy in a grid down situation or an emergency situation, you know, you can boil water almost anywhere. All you do is add the water to these pre-zip pouches that are good for 25 years. It's non-GMO. They have organic packs now, and you got something to eat. So you need water, you need food, and you need friends. And that's really, you know, very important from the physical side. For the spiritual side, we talked about it again. You know, it's what you can bring to the table with others. Sometimes you might not have much food stored, but you might have a skill set or whatever. So I think that's it. And then on the financial side, you have those others covered. Then there's no need to go out and buy, you know, some silver coins. I mean, if you have your food, you have your water, you have your friends, you have a way to keep warm or cool, depending on your location, then you can go in and start. I would recommend silver over gold. It's more affordable and it's much more usable in a barter situation. And that's how I would do it. And that's how I do it personally. Now, as far as the power thing goes, I have been looking for years to put solar, a minimum amount of solar out here on this ranch I live on. And I finally watched another prepping channel that did an interview with a gentleman that runs a company, and it's a EMP proof solar system. And I'd always thought to myself, if there was a CME from the sun or an EMP strike, or just a grid down for whatever reason. And we've had grid downs here in the Northwest. I've had winters where I had about 2 weeks with no power whatsoever at all and had to rely on my generator to get some power going. So it happens. Now, the best backup would be solar. So anyway, I investigated this EMP-proof solar system, and the price was what fit my budget and I was willing to spend. Every time I'd look in the past, and I'd look very recently to doing this install, it was about double what I paid for this one. So I bought it, the panels were shipped. I did hire an electrician because I'm handy, but not that handy. And, you know, you're talking about an emergency thing. You don't want to be fiddling around if you really need it. So in fact, I had him out here to make a fine tune on it today, because I had to rewire so I could get my well pump. So, you know, back, I'm jumping around, I don't mean to, but you asked me, and I said water, food. So I told you where I get my food. Water, I'm on a well, and that's deliberate. When I bought up here in the Northwest to be more remote, because I can run my business from anywhere in the world, I chose a site that has a fair amount of acreage, it has a septic tank, and I can grow my own food. And I've been here for almost 18, 19 years now. And I have all that stuff. And so I've got a hand pump on the well, but obviously with the solar panel system, I just put in this emergency inverter so that I can, you know, not have to go out there in the snow and pump water. It does it automatically, even in the winter, because I've got enough solar to run my computers, pump, to run a couple lights in one of the bedrooms. And that's about it, because it's emergency. And
I want to ask you one question, but I was going to say to you, people have a misunderstanding as regards to, this is my opinion, from what the emails and comments I get back every time I mention, you know, you should have some silver or gold. And, you know, people write back to me all the time saying, well, in the Bible, it says you'll throw the gold out on the street and everything else and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. I understand that. But what I'm trying to get to here is I always say to people, well, if you can't afford an ounce of gold or you can't afford a full, I can't understand why anyone would want to carry around or have a full block of gold at their house or, a bullion of silver or bullion of gold or whatever. My advice to people is always, well, keep it simple, stupid. Go down to the jewelers, local jewelers, and buy gold chains or silver chains because you can actually now get silver from the jewelers at 93-95% pure. The reason I say that is because in olden days, and I'm talking way, way back here, the tribal elders used to wear gold chains or silver chains, and that was a measure of their wealth. And the reason they used to do it was because it's very easy to transport silver bracelets, etc. So I always say to people, well, if you can't afford it, go down to the local jewelers when they've got a sale on and buy heavy linkage chains because you can actually break them apart if you have to. Do you think that's reasonable advice?
I think it's absolutely excellent. I'll tell you why it's excellent. I was referring to a friend of mine over in Idaho, next state over, that's a pretty big prepper. Dialogue from a guy from Argentina during the 2000 financial crisis. And he talked about, having a gun when he went into town for protection. But the point that was the most salient to me was he said he wished he had more silver and gold jewelry because that was used more in barter than even coins were, which is something I never thought about until I read, here's a guy that lived through it. Here's a guy that bartered, daily, but almost daily. Here's a guy that had to go through a financial meltdown in a real country under real conditions, worried about, his safety, worried about his family, and how did he manage? And he managed with using his head, and he managed with using silver and gold jewelry, and primarily silver jewelry. So when I read that article, I got that aha moment. It's really smart.
Yeah.
Since that time, I usually wear a silver chain and a gold chain wherever I go when I travel, even if it's just to Canada, because you never know where you could be with, like you said, a bank failure or whatever. And I'm not paranoid. I'm not, first of all, once it's on, you don't even think about it. Secondly, especially on the gold side, and you can do it with silver, as you said, you can actually break off a piece. And they actually make chains now will break off it fairly easily. I mean, you don't want them to break on their own, but you could break off a piece or two or three and start paying off in grams or whatever. But I won't mention his name because he didn't give me permission, but he's in the same world as I am. He writes in the financial sector, writes primarily about gold and silver investing. And he went to South Africa for a mining tour, and the cab driver took him out in the middle of the boonies and was going to roll him for his money. And he did. So he took this friend of mine out, basically beat him up, took his wallet, took his watch, and left him. And he wasn't out like way out in the middle of, what you call the outback, I guess. But he was pretty far out. But he started walking back and got a ride and got to the airport. Well, the guy didn't know he had this solid gold chain on his neck. The guy missed that. So this friend of mine got up in the airport and said, I need a ticket home to, whatever state he's flying to. And this chain, today's gold value is $2,400. And my ticket is $900. Who will buy me a $900 ticket for this gold chain? And someone did. So that's how he got out of it. So if you think this stuff is ridiculous, think again. Now, does that happen every day? No. Does it happen once a year? I don't know. What I do know is that taught me a valuable lesson, because I like bets where you can't lose. If you buy extra food and everything I say about the direction we're going is wrong or it's not going to happen for another 5 years, which I doubt, there's no harm in doing it. If you have the wherewithal to buy a gold or silver chain or two or three, do it, because it's not going to hurt you in any way, but it could prove very, very practical. So thanks for bringing up that point. And I would have missed it if I hadn't done the kind of study that I do and always, starting off each day fresh and saying, I don't know very much. What can I learn today? And when I read that thing about the Argentina crisis, this is a big print. I printed this whole thing out. It's like 35 pages.
Yeah.
And on one of these many trips, it gave me something to read on the airplane. And the more I read on this thing, the more I go, wow, I learned that, I learned that. I learned a lot from someone that actually went through the experience.
It's funny. I was recently talking to my mother, and they're getting on now. She's 80 years old. And we were talking, we're getting to that stage where we're talking about, you know, endowment sort of stuff, passing stuff down. And it's funny when you talk to people that are in that age group that came through the Second World War, et cetera, they have a big thing for silver. Because if you look in most people's cupboards of that age, they've all got a silver set of knives, forks, spoons, you know, and I mean heavy sets, like the proper pure silver sets, dining sets. And that's another really easy, simple solution, because in the Second World War, I believe that the majority of those were actually melted down for money, or, you know, to buy bread, to buy stuff, because they were pure silver. So that's just another example of, and people don't even realize they've actually got money in their cupboards at home if they've actually got endowment type stuff that's been handed down through generations. Some of that silver in your cupboard, folks, is actually either 100% pure or close enough to it. So it's worth a bit of money. So just remember that.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in on that. There's a movie called Far and Away. It stars Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Yep.
And this epic talks about when they came over to the States from Europe, great big silver serving spoons. And that was all the wealth she brought, which was a fair amount of wealth in the movie.
Yeah.
They get stolen from her. But, you know, again, I'm repeating back to you what some people don't think about, but absolutely. I mean, you've got sterling silver. That's 92.5%. And silver, whether it's in the form of a fork, knife, spoon, a chain, or a coin, it's still silver.
I agree 100%. The one question I'd like to ask you, please don't think I'm trying to be insulting. As a 65-year-old man, because I've got lots of people, my age group goes from the 80s, people age 80 years of age down to, you know, the 30s. I'm 53, so I'm a bit younger than yourself, but getting there. And I know what my physical capabilities are at 53. I'm not going to be running up and down hills anymore and trying to do the calisthenics type of stuff for the younger generation now. But, you know, I used to be a pretty handy kickboxer and boxer and, you know, swimmer and everything else. I still do swimming, but that's about as much as I can handle now. So I'm kind of, my question to would be to you, if you don't mind me asking, what does a 65-year-old gentleman do to keep himself mentally active and more importantly, because like you said, if this does come to pass, we wake up tomorrow, it's all good to be prepared. And as you said, mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, you've got to get all this in alignment. So how does David Morgan prepare himself physically for the challenges that lie ahead that are coming?
Yeah, well, that's going to be a long answer. First of all, I started doing triathlons when I was about 53, and I did them for about 4 years. And I did not do the Ironman distance, so let's be very clear. Triathlons come in all different flavors, distance. I did the Olympic distance, which is about a one-third Ironman, but I was doing it in my mid-50s. Mm-hmm. As far as what I do now, I walk, and I still lift, but I do moderate stuff now. I mean, my strength level is not what it once was. Flexibility goes the older you get, at least that's been my experience. But no, I stay active. So I lift weights a couple times a week. I walk the dog just about every day. And one thing I don't do, I started doing again with my New Year's resolution, that's to stretch. You know, the flexibility is kind of the main thing. My strength is okay, but a lot of it, again, is, you know, chance favoring the prepared mind, meaning that when it comes to physical stuff, you kind of either can do it or you can't, but not being afraid to ask for help. But no, it's very important. I'm going to digress a bit and come back. So I also have a dog here, German Shepherd, 82 pounds. He's extremely well trained. I have him for companionship and for protection, because obviously with what I do, anyone on the internet could pretty much find me. And, you know, somebody might come out here, even though I'm pretty remote, and decide I've got a bunch of silver in the house, which I don't. I have some, and decide that's a easy pickings kind of thing. And if you see an 82 pound German Shepherd, chances are, you know, you got to make a better decision. But just being active, I think, is you know, is a choice, doing something that you really want to do. I'll tell you what also I do on the walk, 20 pound weighted vest. And out where I live, pine trees, just to walk what I call the loop, which is the neighborhood, takes about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So you put on a 20-pound weighted vest, you get your German Shepherd out there, and you walk that thing. You burn a lot of calories, and it's a flat, a down, and up, and a flat. So you're going up a hill once, and it's a pretty good hill. And that's, you know, that's probably fish for most people. I think walking is really underrated. I think it's something that's, you know, free and fun for anyone, anywhere. And certainly that's kind of my mainstay. I quit the triathlons at age 57. It just got too much stress, too much to do with what I do for a living. And trying to work out when you travel as much as I do, which I did for those years, is just a real pain. So, but it gives me bragging rights. So that's that.
Okay. Well, I'm really happy that the audience has gotten to know you, because I thought it was important that people understand it. You know, I see people like yourself, Bill Holter, Rob Kirby, etc., on USA Watchdog and the other shows, and they're always talking about what's coming, you know, and the cataclysmic scenario that will bring. But I've always watched these shows, and I've always been interested in the individual, and you know, what does a financial guru like yourself do to get ready? You know, we can tell people to get ready, but are you really getting ready? That's my main point, I guess, you know. And it's good for people to hear that people like yourself are. It's another tick in the box for other people to understand that, yeah, you know, these people are serious. This is not a joke.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think it's great. I mean, I know Bill Holter a little bit better because he and I flew to Germany and did a conference over there, and we were in the same hotel. So, you know, before the conference, during the conference, even an after conference, we kind of hung out the whole time. And, you know, Bill's very similar to me. He's got solar on his place, and, you know, he's got food and, you know, what you'd expect. But, you know, some of these people that you hear are not really as prepared as you might assume based on their talk. But you know me, I mean, you do and you don't. But, you know, I pretty much walk the walk and talk the talk. But there's some people that just talk the talk or don't really believe it. Or, you know, the idea here is to come out sound and healthy if the crisis is, you know, a 2-week bank shutdown or 2 month or 2 year. And I don't have to say it's going to be 2 years, but you want to be prepared. And, you know, to what level, and that, you know, no one knows. I mean, no one knows the future. So,
well, let's,
you know, for me personally, you know, I'm very content with where I'm at. But, you know, what's funny and not ha-ha is with my travel schedule. I mean, I could be prepared like crazy. I just told you all the preps I've made, but I could be lecturing in London and all of a sudden it happens. And now what do I do? You know, if I'm in Canada, I could rent a car, get a friend of mine to drive me back down here, or even Mexico. But if I'm in London, I'd have a tough time swimming back home, you know.
That's
a possibility.
That's a good,
could happen.
Good segue into one of my questions, mate, I was actually going to ask you, when David Morgan gets on a plane and flies over to, you know, London, for example, in the back of your mind, is that nagging thing all, is this the last time I'm ever going to see America again? Or is this, you know, the last flight I'm ever going to take? Or, you know, how am I going to get home? You know, I've got friends and family that travel a lot, as similar to yourself. And, you know, they laugh at me when I tell them. I say, you know, look, my wife recently went to England for a month because that's where she's from. And she took the children and everything. And she wasn't allowed to go until we had everything prepared. I said, if you get into trouble when you're over there, the system collapses. I said, the first thing you're going to have to do is go to the Australian embassy, whichever country you're in, and report in and say, well, I've got to get home. And that's about the best chance you're going to get home, I think, if that actually happens. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do think about it. I don't obsess about it. And for me personally, most of the places I speak, I have pretty good friends. I mean, real friends, not just acquaintances or people that like my speech or subscribe to me or something like that. So in London, I probably got two or three people that I would just, you know, basically stay with them for, you know, I guess an indefinite period of time. That's true in Canada. It's true in London. It's true in Germany. Wouldn't be true in France, but haven't been to France in quite some time. Switzerland, no, I'd be kind of, if I was in Switzerland, I could probably make it back to London, or I could probably make it to Germany. So I have thought about it, and that's where I'm at. So luckily I have made these really real friends over the years that if it were to occur, they know me well enough, you know, from, excuse the expression, a gut level, to say, yeah, you know, you can hang here for a while. And then, of course, going to the embassy is exactly correct. But I try not to think about it too much. I mean, the thought's there. But, you know, if that were to occur, you know, you just have to, again, chance favors prepared mind. You'd have to have an attitude of I can do this. You know, I can get home when I need, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to get home.
Yeah.
And what's the best solution to this problem?
Well, that's a good point. You know, if you're coming from Australia, as you recently found out, it's a long way to swim.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, if you're going to Europe, America, et cetera, it's a long way to swim. Let's just branch off a bit into what's going on in America at the moment, if you don't mind, and just your thoughts on the current coup, counter coup that's currently going on in America, and how does David Morgan run his life at the moment, you know, as a financial person in the current environment, political environment in the US, which I've got to say, when I grew up here in Australia, we had a saying here in Australia, if America sneezes, Australia catches a cold. Well, it's my number one worry at the moment is what's going on in America politically. You know, there's some good things going on, but geez, I tell you what, there's some pretty dire, horrible things going on as well. So I was just wondering if you could help the Australian viewers understand financially, geopolitically, what this curtails in the future and what it can bring in the future, good or bad.
Well, I think start at the top and work my way down is probably the best. I mean, the first absolute is that as a financial person, you really are never supposed to say you can guarantee anything. You know, I can't say, you know, if you buy this stock, I guarantee it'll double in a year. Even on something that's quote-unquote guaranteed, like a U.S. Treasury bill that pays like 2.8% or something. I mean, that's guaranteed by the Treasury. I guess you could say the word guarantee. But the one guarantee I could pretty much state is that all fiat currencies has ended up failing.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thought that everyone needs to realize is that, you know, this idea that, well, it hasn't collapsed yet. Well, when people say it hasn't collapsed yet, what they really mean is they haven't lost their job yet. Because if you go back to 2008, and I won't read all of these, but just in the 2007-08 financial collapse, and the mainstream news calls it that, I mean, New Century went out of business, American Home went out of business. ABN AMRO went out of business, Northern Rock went out of business, Bear Stearns went out of business, Countrywide Financial went out of business, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac went out of business and had to be acquired and reorganized. American International Group, that had most of the derivatives insurance, went out of business, and that was taken over by the federal government. Lehman Brothers went out of business, was taken over by Barclays. Lehman Brothers was taken over by Noma Holdings. Wachovia was taken over by Wells Fargo. Royal Bank of Scotland was taken over by the government of the United Kingdom. UBS was taken over by the Swiss National Bank. I think you're starting to catch my drift. So when people say, oh, David, you're full of it, it never collapsed, 100% totally ignorant. Excuse me, but they are, because we had a collapse. What we have now is a situation where all we've done is papered over. We made the problem bigger. There's more derivatives. There's more counterparty risk. And there's less ability for the governments of the world to come together and put out the fire the next time. So we've already witnessed a collapse. Entities that I just named failed and were restructured, taken over mostly many times by governments themselves. So now we are in a situation that they have not improved the situation at all. And because of that fact, when it happens next time, we don't know what the absolute outcome will be, but in the United States, they've taken away the bailout provision. That's illegal. Now it's bail in. So anyone in the States, particularly the middle class, what's left of it, because we've been losing a lot of the middle class, but what's left of the middle class, some people have savings in a bank. Well, if there's another failure, and I'm pretty sure there will be, then it's you're going to be bailed in. So if you got your $50,000 worth of savings in your bank thinking, you know, you're scared to do anything, you don't want to buy gold, you don't want to buy food, you don't want to, you know, this or that, you're just going to keep your savings intact, that could be end up being one of the worst decisions you ever made. Because if there was a financial reset, the first thing they're going to do is bail in. That's what the law says. So these are, you know, I don't like to paint the doom and, oh, it's fear porn and all the crap I get on the comment sections of the videos I do. I like to stand up and tell the truth. And the truth is it failed in 2008. It hasn't gotten a lot better. And you can prepare or don't. To me, after the event, and say, you never told us. That's something I'm not going to stand for, because I've told the truth from the day I started, you know, doing interviews on the internet, the day I first time I ever spoke in front of an investment forum, and I'm not going to back down. I don't want to misrepresent the situation, but I want to be as accurate, level-headed, and grounded as I possibly can. I'm telling you the real facts. The real facts do not paint a great picture going forward. Sooner or later, there will be a reset. What exactly it looks like, I don't think anyone can tell you exactly.
Well, the reason I started all this was due to financial and by listening to yourself. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. I knew things were bad, but I just didn't realize, I guess like a lot of other people, just how bad the situation was. And as you said, there's been a lot of wallpapering over the cracks from day one. And then when you actually start, you know, as a layman, as myself, and you start literally going down the rabbit hole of the economics of it all, you realize that, ooh, hang on a minute, this is not what they told us. And, of course, then you have to find out via people like yourself that, yeah, this is not going to end well. And I agree with you. I think the biggest problem that we've got at the moment is complacency, because of the fact that, and I'm not pointing the finger at yourself at all, but people in your realm have been telling us all now for a few years, and people are actually getting very complacent, in my opinion. They're saying, oh, you've been saying this for years and it hasn't happened. Well, I said on one of my videos the other day, a couple of days ago, I was pointing out that the VIX index dropped to a 7, and it was there for a good 2 to 3 days. And it's never done that before in history, which just, you know, if you actually know anything about the VIX index and the financial system, well, how can the VIX index be at the bottom when they're telling us that on the very same day, the stock market went past 25,000 or something? It just doesn't stand to reason to me. It's just not, none of the facts add up.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, everyone needs to know the facts and make their own decision. I think that I'll digress. I remember when I started on the speaking circuit, and that's been almost 20 years ago, and it was very early on, and one of the younger brokers, the show, and we're all, you know, in cocktail hour kind of a thing. And he got a little bit in my face. He said, we've been hearing this crap from you guys for so long. You're so full of it. And I said, well, what do you think a collapse looks like? And he kind of paused and he didn't really have an answer. So, well, do you think that in a collapse that like everything burns to the ground and all you get is a bunch of ashes and a little bit of smoke coming up off the ground? And he didn't say yes, but I could tell from his body language that was kind of his idea of a collapse. Well, that's not what happens at all. I said, in a true financial collapse, all the wealth is there. All the fields of grain, all the oil fields are there, all the churches, all the roads, all the houses, all the banks, everything is still there. What happens is the ownership changes. So in a financial collapse, the kind that I see, the people that can't make good on their debts lose, and the people that live within their means, modest people that are actually in better shape than some of these highly leveraged banks, brokerages, just general businesses that are over leveraged. They lose because they can't pay back what they owe. So that's what happens in a financial collapse. I want to go a step further because that's look at, but a little bit too simplified. Because what I see coming is as this unwinds further, and it doesn't necessarily happen overnight, although it can accelerate, is as, let's say, more retail stores go down, and there's been plenty that have, you could have, you know, wage disputes and a lot of things. So you could have like a transportation problem because the truckers were not getting paid sufficiently for a readjustment on how much food costs, for an example. So now you have a compounding problem because even though the gas and oil is there and the trucks are running, these guys refuse, gals refuse to get in their truck and take a load of, groceries to the grocery warehouse in the next major city because they don't feel they're getting paid adequately. So these things start to compound, and just an example, so you can use your own imagination from there. But that's kind of what I see happening. Or it could go a different way. You could have wage problems because food prices keep skyrocketing and the government's, in our government, we don't even put food in the inflation index. Something as critical as food and energy, they took out because they know what's coming. That's why. So again, if you're not getting paid sufficiently because food prices basically doubled over a year, you're going to go to your boss and say, you know, I don't want to drive. I can't drive this truck without increasing my wages. I'm not feeding my family adequately anymore. I'm just using an example, but I'm trying to explain the complexity of the system that we now rely on, that everyone takes for granted tomorrow's going to be like today. But what if it isn't? And we came very close in 2008. Most people don't realize how close we came to really shutting down the system. We really did get a lot closer than most people can imagine.
I think they've done a fantastic job of covering it up myself. It's been very hard. It still is very hard to find any real relevant information as to just how bad it was. That's my opinion, you know, as I've been searching the net and everything else, and you've got to really dig into the fine details to find out just how bad it really was.
Yeah, well, I can give you a quick scenario on that. I mean, basically, the whole financial system, primarily run by the banks, has to do with trust, and they trust each other's paper. So, for example, like Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, I mean, this is mortgages in the United States backed by the U.S. government. I mean, this is like mortgages. I mean, this is like, you know, it's backed by real assets, real estate, you know. Well, that failed. And so all this paper failed across the board. In other words, Bank A did not trust Bank B's paper, and Bank B didn't trust Bank A's paper. So basically everything came to a halt. And when it comes to a halt, that's it. I mean, it's done.
Yeah.
So what happened was that the Federal Reserve, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm kind of neutral on this actually, said to Bank A, you don't trust Bank B's paper, Bank B doesn't trust your paper, here's what we're going to do. You, Bank A, give me your paper and I will give you T-bills for it. Bank B, you give me your paper and I'll give you T-bills for it. Everybody trusts the United States government's, you know, money. And the banks all say, oh, yeah, we trust the government's money. So what happened was, as you well know, but I'm trying to make it very simple for everyone to get it, is that all this bad debt, mostly mortgages, but there was other crap too, other bad paper, basically took it all on their books and gave out good money for bad, basically. And that is what kept it going. Now, if they didn't take the action they took as quickly as they took it, basically the whole thing was coming down to where no one was going to transact with anyone else.
That's a scary scenario.
Came close.
I one of the companies that you didn't mention, I'll just ask you to just highlight that a bit more. So now all that debt is actually officially owned by the U.S. government. Is that correct?
Well, officially owned by the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank that loans money to the U.S. government. So it's really on the bank, the deed of the Federal Reserve Board, not on the balance sheet of the United States Treasury. Yep. But, you know, when the bank, the Federal Reserve, loans money into existence to the United States government, mm-hmm. who's on the hook to pay it back at value plus interest. Yeah. Well, it's the U.S. citizen. That's who's responsible for it.
Yeah,
the government doesn't pay it back. So indirectly, the citizenry is basically on the hook for all this bad crap, really, yeah.
And that's a similar scenario, more or less, around the entire world at the moment, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
No, these banks aren't there for you. They're there for them. The whole system was about saving the banks, not saving the people. If they wanted to save the people, they would have structured it a lot differently than they did. They structured it to save the banks, and the banks are saved for the time being. But, you know, the reality, as I said a moment ago, is it's only gotten worse in reality. Nothing's really been resolved. They keep playing the same game they've always played with all these derivatives, manipulating the foreign exchange, manipulating the interest rates, keeping the precious metals under pressure so people don't really want them, and making sure that the smiley faces come on the mainstream boob tube and tell everybody everything's wonderful, it's fantastic, it never looked better, look at how high the stock market is.
That's exactly what I said before. On the same day that the VIX was at a 7 handle, they were telling everyone that the stock market went past 25,000.
Exactly.
You know, it's just it's like walking through a hall of mirrors, really. The last question, I've got my own take on this, but I want to hear your take, and I suppose a lot of other people would like to hear it as well, is the big white elephant in the room is the cryptos. I personally don't believe all the hype on the cryptos. I don't have any. If people want to invest in it, that's fine. I can tell you a conversation quickly that I had with someone on an email the other day. I said, tell me where the cryptos come from and tell me where their money's based and tell me how you're going to make money on it and what happens to the money when you make money on it. Well, in a simplistic term, if you want to make money on it, unless you've got an offshore account and you're one of the big guys and you're laundering a lot of money, in my opinion, and you haven't got any offshore accounts, the only place you can put that is back in your bank account in the relative country, either Australia, US. And the other reason I don't like it is that when the banks decide that they've had enough of using the cryptos for their own benefit, then they're going to turn on the people that actually got it. And I think there'll be some big bills coming down people's pathways in the future, because I wouldn't mind betting that any cryptocurrency that's put back into a bank, there's a special code that is done so at the moment. So people in the future will be astounded when they receive a bill from the tax department. That's my opinion. Like I said, I personally am not into it, but there is loads of people who are. What's your thoughts on cryptos moving forward or backwards or in the future?
Well, I wrote an article, only one for the public domain. In my private work where people pay me, you know, I express more direct views. But this article I wrote on March 14th, 2014, so, you know, more than 3 years ago. It's called My Two Bits About Bitcoin by David Morgan. And I go through a lot of things. In fact, when I was down in Australia, I was put on the crypto panel because the promoter for that event, she learned about, you know, that I knew something about cryptos. I don't claim to be an expert, but I wrote this article, which you can read. In fact, I wouldn't change a word of it, really. And one of the sections on it says, perhaps cryptocurrencies are best for governments, ? The trials and tribulations of Bitcoin notwithstanding, it seems unlikely that cryptocurrencies will disappear from the contemporary scene. What tomorrow's digital exchange media will look like, how their values will be determined, and how much privacy will remain after governments around the globe have inserted themselves into the inner working of these systems remains to be seen. I'd say that's pretty prescient based on about 3 years ago when I wrote that, because up till that time, everyone was saying they're anonymous, can't be traded, blah, 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 blah. I go on to say, but you can be absolutely certain that no government is going to just roll over and let a parallel fiat quote-unquote money system be introduced which could meaningfully compete with its own currency, let alone replace it. Does that sound like I know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You've more or less said exactly what my thoughts on it the other night, and it still is that the banks are using it at the moment to hide hyperinflation. And what I mean by that is, and I hope you, if I'm wrong, you can correct me, but I'd like to think that people are using cryptocurrency at the moment, and that's why it's going sky high, is because somewhere along the line, the money's got to come home. And I wouldn't mind betting that the banks, JP Morgan, everybody else is using the cryptos at the moment to actually hide that certain money, the hyperinflation money that is coming back. And it's going to get worse because of the obvious, the petrodollar demise, petro-narco demise, I should say. All that money has to go somewhere. And I wouldn't mind betting, having a silent bet on it, that the US government and a few other people are actually using the cryptos at the moment to hide that money. That's my thoughts on it anyway.
Okay, well, I'm going to add on to that. I have a slightly different take, but I'm not saying you're wrong, that's for sure. Going back to this article, I'm going to address that and come back to your question. But, you know, I started off this article saying I've been asked about my viewpoint on Bitcoin, and my response is simply, I view these things from a totally free market perspective. I've often stated the market knows more than any of us, end quote. I would not want to be labeled a hypocrite by stating my conviction that real free market is capable of making decisions that are in the best interests of the masses, and then proceed to disparage Bitcoin through a personal bias. In other words, if the market says Bitcoin is the way to go, who's David Morgan to say it isn't? I would defer to the market. That's what I basically said there. Coming back to your point, I've always been for competing currencies, but one in Litecoin and Ethereum and on it goes. I think there's like 1,200 of these things now. So I'm for an alternative monetary system. I'm for a private monetary system. I'm for one that the people dream up on their own and agree to. I'm not against any of that. And so I think part of it is that story. In other words, early on, I think some people that are early adopters saw it as a way to have an alternative monetary system. The problem I had with the alternative is it's a fiat system. And secondly, it's not as many people think it's purported to be. So those are my criticisms. Again, it's in this article I wrote, you know, almost 3 years ago, March 15, 16, 17. So it's almost 4 years ago I wrote this.
Yeah.
Yes, you're seeing some of what you said, I think, Prep, is some of the money's kind of hiding out there, moving into it. It's an alternative currency. But with what's going on, as you stated, with, you know, the tax authorities jumping on it, people have been arrested for money laundering in the United States just by using Bitcoin. Guys have been thrown in jail for a short period of time just for transacting business in Bitcoin. The powers that be are basically clamping down more and more the last couple of months. I mean, again, I'm free market. Look, if you made a bunch of money in it and you're happy with it, good for you. As far as I'm concerned, there's too many detriments to it. And yet I don't want to be a hypocrite. So let me get this out for everybody, because someone's going to say, well, you SOB, you blah, 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 blah. If you want to look at a really decentralized way to own wealth, it's gold and silver coins or bars, but primarily coins. Because if you own it, you pay cash, you put it in your pocket, basically no one's the wiser. And you could use that coins to buy something with. And again, no one's the wiser if you choose to keep it anonymous. So that's really a decentralized monetary instrument that truly is private. And there's no ledger, you know, there's no ledger of it, you know, that takes place. Now, I think, and I don't know, that there could be the opportunity to bridge a real system, or I should say system, a real currency or real money, I would just say better, like gold or silver, with the crypto space. And so friends of mine in Canada have started working on a system that does that and marries silver with crypto. Now, whether or not it could be held totally anonymous or not, I do not know. That's the direction they want to go, but I won't promise anything that I can't guarantee, and I can't. But there may be a space for this. I really don't know. I've contributed a fair amount of silver to get this thing off the ground, and it's not just me. It's a fair amount of people that believe in this idea. So I hope I'm being very clear, Prep, on this. But to me, it's a decentralized way to move real money back and forth, silver, with your phone if you want, you know, an app. And it's accounted for. In fact, it's more than 100% coverage. In other words, there'll always be more silver in the system on deposit than there are tokens out there in cyberspace. And you can always take those tokens and cash it back into real silver if you choose to do so.
Well, that's got to be better than backing it with the US dollar.
I think so.
Sounds like a feasible plan, actually, and a quite logical one, because it's actually backed by something. And that's part of my problem with the cryptos, is that it's backed by the US dollar. You're buying a Bitcoin for a dollar. So, and I don't understand that at all, really, because who said that you could do that? Or who said that they could do that? I guess that's what I'm getting down to at the end of it. You know, as far as I know, the government will eventually, when they've finished using it, I'm guessing, come down hard on it. I don't know whether you know this or not, but they've actually started shutting down people's bank accounts over here in Australia that are connected to cryptocurrencies. And it actually happened to two people that I know. And I will go one step further with this. I know a gentleman in America who had his account frozen, so because of the same reason. So it's not long before they actually, you know, start saying, hey, guys, come on, you know, where are you getting it? If people, it amazes me that people think that the cryptos are just going to get away with it. I just don't understand the logic of that line of thinking myself. But hey, like you said, if people make money on it, great. You know, I'm all for it. Happy days to you guys. But I just think that there's a bigger, nastier side that's going to come with it later. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, look, I'd like to thank you for having the guts to come and let me interview you for a start. And, you know, obviously being on my show. And now you've reached a broader Australian audience, I can tell you that. And it will go down very well, I can promise you that, because we don't hear very many people. There's not very many people on the Australian side that are actually interviewing people like yourself. So we, on behalf of all Australians, I'd like to thank you for taking that step. It's been, you're the only person so far that's actually submitted for me interviewing them. Had a few knockbacks. It's probably because of the Australian thing, I think. So thank you. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Let me give a free gift to everybody. I have a sister website. It's called Riches in Resources. That's Riches, RICHESNIN Resources, all one word. Go to that website. Just get on our free email list, and I'll send you I think it's 11 or 12 page PDF file that talks basically some of the stuff we've already discussed on your show. And it's just a good resource. It'll help. I started to look at doing a solutions conference in Las Vegas where I would actually get a bunch of people that have different skill sets in the prepper world, all the way from living off the grid totally, a friend of mine in Montana, some other financial types like myself, some on food prep, a lot of this stuff, and it just went nowhere. Again, I don't want to whine, but I lost money on it. I had to put up so much money to the hotel and guaranteed there'd be so many people attending, and I lost my deposit because I just couldn't get it off the ground. I'm not saying I won't do it, but and there's a need for it. I think what you do is really, really good, and you do have a community that you do meet together and you do swap ideas, and that's probably a better idea than mine, which was to basically make it a little more formal. I had a pretty modest, I mean, I don't know what the airfare is because it varies. I mean, if you could walk to Las Vegas, the airfare is zero. If you have to drive, that's fine. If you have to fly, it's whatever. But the price of the event, I think I had it very pretty modest, like $150 or something. But again, I couldn't get it off the ground. So if you get on the mailing list at richesandresources.com, if I ever come up with something like that, you'll be on the list. So you'll be notified about, you know, any events like that I do, any speaking engagements that I have, any of the interviews I do like this, as long as I get the permission from whoever conducted the interview, I post that up. So it saves you searching all across the web. And, you know, if you don't like the interview, you know, turn it off and wait for the next week's update. But it's all for free. I'm happy to do it. And hopefully, it'll help people out.
Yeah, that's the, like you said, that's the main line now. We've gone past the point of a long time ago, as you pointed out, of no return. So the next obvious step is to actually build communities, which is what I'm trying to do more than anything. It's, you know, people think this is about me. It's actually not. I don't get paid to do this. I actually want to help my fellow humans and my fellow Australians by trying to actually waken up or awake the people, the whole of the country, if I'm really lucky. But I just want to, that's my main aim with this whole scenario is to get people awake. It's a bit more like yourself, I'm guessing.
Well, you're doing a great job. I mean, I do listen to your stuff. Not every one of them, but I've listened to quite a few over the years. And thank you for putting up my picture with Eric Sprott when we were down in Australia. It's very much appreciated. And as I said, I was invited back. I don't have the details yet, but who knows? I may get down there again in 2018.
I hope so. And then I hope to meet you up next time, if time allows, if I've got enough time and everything else. I'd love to meet you personally, mate, and have a beer and have a chat. On that note,
very good.
I'd like to finish up with the Lord's Prayer, mate, if you'd allow me. Bring our community together just that little bit more spiritually. As I said, I'm not a religious person, but I've got a strong belief in God. The Lord's Prayer is not, in my mind, the most religious prayer in the world. It's a statement to God, in my opinion, and a gathering prayer for people to come together. So I'll just bring that up now. Just one second. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to finish off this fantastic interview, in my opinion, by saying the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. David, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and all your sound advice, and that you actually, the big thing for us, or for me as well, is that you actually are walking the walk and talking the talk, and committed to actually being prepared. It's sound advice that you've given everyone, and I thank you for that, mate. God bless.
God bless you as well. Thank you for the opportunity.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.